So there has always been conflict or discussion between science and religion. And this has always been there, even in the 19th century, 20th century. It's just become more acute now because with the advent of computers and spaceships and travel to Mars and Moon and everywhere, people think that religion is not really relevant in this modern age, in the age of computers. In fact, I recently saw a cartoon where, it was Guru Purnima, where we recognize our guru and we bow down for the knowledge. So on this cartoon, this person is down on his knees and bowing down, and on top it is written Google. Google was, he says, "I bow down to you, O Lord Google, for all the knowledge you give me." So people think that, in fact, Nehru told one of the children, who we have Sunday school, and told him, "You should come to the classes." And he says, "Why should I come?" So she said, "Well, you can learn about our culture, our history, about Ram and Krishna and Ramayana." He says, "Why should I come to the class? I can just Google it." So people think that science will answer every question. And this is a long-standing dispute and as to which is more relevant and which one is useful. So in chapter 15, Swamiji talks about the four layers or four grades of knowledge. So he says first was the age of perception, where man was totally just, man had just emerged, either from monkeys or had been created, whatever. And so their understanding was very much similar to animals. They saw birth, they saw death, they saw the sun and the moon. And if it rained, they went into the cave. And if it was sunny, they would go out, pluck fruits, kill animals, and eat. And so they just perceived the world. Okay, this is the world. There is a sun, moon, stars, and all. Then came the age of observation, where man tried to find a reason why rain is happening, why there are problems. And this was the age of superstition because they still didn't have scientific inquiry. So if a man went out of his house and a black cat crossed his path, in India they consider it very inauspicious. A black cat crossed his path and then he went further and he had an accident. So he said, "The accident happened because of the black cat. So that must have happened to somebody sometime." So since then, black cats are considered inauspicious. If they kala billi dasta kaat gayi, if a black cat crosses your path, then actually people will turn around, go home, pray to God, and purify, and then take another path. So that much super. People still have that. So that is the age of observation, where a black cat crossed and an accident happened. They have no connection, but we connect it. So that is the. Then came the age of scientific inquiry, in which we live right now, where science has tried to explain everything, and they have been able to, through analysis. We have, gone to the subatomic particles. No, a lot of the diseases have been conquered. We are able to communicate anywhere in the world just by phone, by video, by audio. People have gone into space, gone to the bottom of the earth. So, even the origin of the universe, where at the Big Bang, everything is known. And they have been able to analyze, why there are problems, physical problems, why is there, disease, why is there all that. And so with analysis, though, with science, the knowledge has become very complex. We have so much information. You just turn on your phone and there's 100 emails waiting, and then WhatsApp messages and Facebook and Twitter and I don't know what all. I try to get out of as many groups as I can because all they do is just take up your time. And why do I want to know somebody's having dinner? There's one person posted on Facebook, I'm eating dinner cooked by my wife, and he put a picture of himself on the dining. I mean, what's special? Everybody has dinner cooked by their wife, or maybe other way around. I mean, so what? But people just waste their time. And so the more you go out into the world, more your mind becomes complex and becomes confused. And then there is so much information available. There is all these different schools of philosophy. Previously, they used to be divided. But now you can Google and you can get information from Deepak Chopra or from Wayne Dyer or from Confucius or German philosophers or Greek philosophers or Plato or Vedanta, I mean, Buddhism. Whatever you want is on the click of the finger. And so people, their mind is becoming very complex because the more you look outward, the more stress you get. Because the mind, the goal of spirituality and goal of meditation is to slow down and quieten the mind. I'm not saying that one shouldn't use computers or modern knowledge or medicine, but there has to be a limit. Too much emphasis on knowledge becomes a problem. So contemplation told us about not only the laws of nature, but who is the lawgiver. See, first of all, there are laws. Why does it rain? Why is there thunder? Why is there lightning? But then who is the one that decides the movement of the planets? Who is the one? And it is so precise. I think I had mentioned a while back this example when this spacecraft went to Pluto. Now, it 8 years before it took off. And 8 years, they knew that 8 years from now, where will Pluto be in the entire universe, which is the furthest planet circulating. And 8 years earlier, they had planned the trajectory of that spaceship so that it should go close to Pluto, and it went within a few thousand feet. So, of course, the scientists were amazing. But more amazing is the one who planned the circle, that Pluto is going. They knew that Pluto will be exactly there in 8 years and whatever minutes and hours and seconds, how long it will take. So it tells us about the lawgiver. So there are two words, knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge tells us about the world, and that is very important. It's necessary. I'm not saying that one should not. But wisdom tells us about ourselves, who I am. And knowledge is external, wisdom is internal. So talking about knowledge and wisdom, I think a while back I told the story of Sherlock and Watson, Sherlock Holmes, but it's worth repeating. So Sherlock Holmes and Watson were out camping. And so in the middle of the night, Sherlock wakes up, Watson, wake up. He said, what do you see? And what do you think? So Watson looks around and says, well, I see the stars. So astronomically speaking, it tells me there are billions and billions of galaxies, and Earth is a small little planet rotating around a medium-sized star called the Sun, and there are countless galaxies, okay? And theosophically speaking, it tells me about there is a God who is almighty, who has created this beautiful universe and all these planets, right? And meteorologically speaking, it tells me that since I can see the stars, it's going to be a clear day tomorrow. It will be a good day for us for hiking. So Sherlock Holmes is listening. And then Watson says, and what do you think, Sherlock Holmes? He says, you idiot, somebody stole our tent. Oh. While we were sleeping. So we are so caught up in acquiring information that we forget what is the basis of that information. And so we are so, like this person, he's so caught up that he forgets the essentials. What are the fundamentals of life? What is it that supports life? What is it that maintains everything? Why am I able to talk? How am I able to think? How is this everything working? So they divided knowledge into ordinary knowledge and higher knowledge. It's very interesting. So ordinary knowledge, this is might sound heretical, but ordinary knowledge is whatever you can perceive with your eyes, with your ears, with your nose, skin, tongue, whatever you can perceive with the body, whatever you can, emotions you can feel with the mind, whatever you can think, thoughts, everything is ordinary knowledge. Everything, anything you can see, hear, smell, taste, touch, think, perceive. All the planets, the stars, the atoms, the microscope, the telescope, the... And the great thinkers of the Vedas, the Upanishads said, even the Vedas, even the Upanishads, even Bible, even Quran, even Guru Granth Sahib, they're all ordinary knowledge. Why? Because we can perceive it. Anything, it's ordinary. It's not the higher knowledge. People get very upset. You mean the Bible is? Yes. You mean the Quran, the Guru Granth Sahib, the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads? Yes. They all represent ordinary knowledge, but not the highest knowledge. Now, why would these great thinkers say that? You know, it sounds so bad. You know, my religious book, you are calling it ordinary. I worship it. I put it in the temple and I pray to it. And I, why do they call it ordinary knowledge and not the higher knowledge? So I'll give an example. Now, suppose you read in the newspaper that it rained, say you're living in Seattle and you read that it rained 10 inches yesterday. Of course, here, you know, you won't get 10 inches in 2 years, but it rained 10 inches yesterday. And today they are predicting another 5 inches of rain. And then they show picture of the rain, you know, falling, and there's a flooding and all. Now, when you squeeze the newspaper, can you get even a drop of rain from it? No, you cannot get, you might see a picture of rain and they might tell you about the rain, but can you get a drop of water from the newspaper? No. So similarly, these scriptures, of course, the scriptural knowledge, I'm not putting it down. It is useful in telling us about God, in taking us towards God. Of course, it's better than reading about, you know, some movie or an actor or some play or violence or murder and all. Obviously, you know, it is superior to all that knowledge. So this knowledge can take us towards God and tell us about God, just as the newspaper can tell us about rain. But can you get God, like this, you squeeze this book, can you pull out God from it? You can't. You cannot find God or touch God or know God. This book can tell us how to reach God, how to know God, but cannot give us the experience of God. So there is a difference between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge is knowing, wisdom is experiencing, becoming one with that knowledge. And that's why these scriptures, no doubt they need to be worshipped, they need to be respected, they are very, these prophets are very great, how they live their life. But more important than what they spoke is what their experience was. So we have to pay attention to what Jesus said when he said, Father in heaven and I are one. What did Guru Nanak say, that, you know, what he has experienced? What did Krishna say? What did Buddha say? So being, knowing is different from being. So like I know the table. This table is made of metal, say, or made of wood. I know this chair. But by knowing the chair, do I become the chair? No. By knowing the table, do I become the table? By reading the book, I don't become book. But by knowing God, knowing Atman, I become God-like. I become one with that knowledge. So I experience God's presence within me as me. And that is the difference. So all the scriptures will take us and give us the technique of how to reach that state. But then ultimately that mind has to be quietened, mind has to be stilled. The intellect, even though it is necessary for this knowledge to read and study the book, can become an obstacle. Because we spend so much time in reading, watching, studying, all that, that we have no time to be. So we are all the time becoming. Next time when I finish this particular book, then I'll be fine, or that book, or that retreat, or that camp. I mean, those are all good. I'm not saying that one should not. But the goal of spirituality is to become one with that knowledge. Experience that knowledge as me, experience God's presence as within. And trying to see God outside is an error. Yes, God is outside. God is everywhere. God is when you see the rainfall, or when you, nowadays, I was talking yesterday, it's so beautiful. If you go out at night around 9, 9:30, you can see four planets in a row, Mars, Saturn, Jupiter and Venus, all four. It's so beautiful and they're all so clear, all four around before Venus sets. Venus sets around 9:30, 10. So around 9, 9:30, soon as the sun sets, just go out, and if you have that app, you'll find all four. Mars is just rising, Saturn is a tiny little star in the middle, and then Jupiter is right ahead of us. And then Venus is setting. Ah, it's a beautiful sight. So the point is that knowing the truth is the difference from becoming the truth or being the truth. So all our emphasis is on knowing. And knowing is essential. Knowing is preliminary. Reading the scriptures. Even meditation is a preliminary. Meditation is not the final. I'll talk before we start meditation on what is meditation and what is the goal of meditation. Meditation is not ultimate. Meditation takes you towards that ultimate, and that's why meditation is so beneficial. But these knowledge and wisdom, the ordinary and the higher, are not in conflict with each other. It's not that one is lower and one is higher. Person studying the lower should rise to the higher. So I should, the scriptures are not only to be worshipped, they are to be studied. And my mother had a very big conflict with people from that particular sect she belonged to, where they worshipped the book, our spiritual book. And she said, that's wonderful. But why don't you read it and see what the master has said, the prophet has said. They won't read it, but they'll do offer their aarti, the light to it, and you know, pray to it. That's unfortunately what is happening, that we have stopped our progress because we think the book is God. That's it. No, book is divine. Yes, book is God, but study in the book so you reach God and discover God. So that's why one should rise from the lower to the higher. So from this ordinary knowledge which is experienced to the experiencer. So from the experienced to the experiencer. And who is the experiencer? Who experiences my body? Who knows my body? Who knows my mind, who knows my intellect, who knows my vasanas, desires, who knows objects, emotions, thoughts, who knows this ego? The self, the supreme self, which we call Om or consciousness or God or Brahman or the substratum. So it is a continuous process from studying to being, from knowledge to wisdom. That's why the wisdom is also in our scriptures called as light. Just as light, when it's dark in the room and you turn on the light and it removes darkness. So when the light of wisdom shines within us, then the ignorance is removed. And they complement each other. There is no conflict. It's not that the lower is this and the upper is this. They complement each other. They support each other. You have to read and study, then only you can meditate. If you don't know who I am, if you have never read the scriptures, never studied the Upanishads, then you sit for meditation and you chant Om, and then what do I meditate on? What is my goal of meditation? What is the purpose of meditation? Why am I studying? In fact, the example they give in India is there was the Swami Vivekananda, who was the first one to bring Vedanta to the US in 1890, he brought it. Even 1890 to 1892, he spent a year or two in the US. He was a lawyer, highly educated, very intelligent. In those days, not that many people went to college. But he had the desire to know God, to reach God, and to realize God. Swami Vivekananda, you can Google his life story. So he would go to all the saints and masters, and he would ask them, have you seen God? He would say, well, not really, I am trying. Yes, I have read about, I have talked about, and have you yourself experienced God's presence? No, I haven't. He would say, okay, he would leave. He wouldn't listen to any lecture. His only question was, have you seen God? Finally, he goes to Ramakrishna, who is an uneducated priest who is doing the prayers in the temple, only had studied second grade. Never went beyond second grade in school. But he had so much devotion and love for Mother Goddess that he ultimately experienced her presence within and became one with that. In fact, sometimes when people would bring a garland to the temple, instead of garlanding the Mother Goddess, he would garland himself, and people would get upset. You know, I brought this for the Mother Goddess. How dare you? You are ordinary human. So when Vivekananda goes to him and asks him, have you seen God? He said, I see God more clearly than I see you. I see her every day and I talk to her and I see her more closely. And Vivekananda said, this is my teacher. He sits down there and this person has studied second grade. But he bows down, touches his feet and then sits at his feet. And this person is giving him pearls of wisdom and he's absorbing it. And it is said one day Vivekananda was sitting and it so happened that he kind of dozed off, lay down, and Ramakrishna, was not asleep, but lay down, and Ramakrishna, the teacher who was second grade past, the priest, put the big toe on his forehead and instantly he realized, wow, this is the truth. He was already ready. It's not that Ramakrishna was doing some favor. He was ready, but he needed that teacher's touch to realize. And then he became a great master and traveled all over the world. So the point is that this educated lawyer, brilliant thinker, went to a second grade priest to get this highest knowledge. So that's why they say there is a difference between knowledge and wisdom. Vivekananda had the ordinary knowledge. He was called Narendranath, but his teacher had the higher knowledge of who God is and experienced God's presence within and constantly talked to God. Experience. So that is the difference. And so this wisdom, this higher knowledge shows us that there is a perishable world that is always changing. Things are being born and die, you know, all of us are born, will go. This building was not there. The sun and the moon and the stars eventually will perish in billions of years. But what is the imperishable reality that supports this whole universe? That is what this And in meditation, we transcend our mind and intellect and go to that substratum, to that support. And that is the essence of this teaching. As long as we are at the level of thought, anything you can think about, you are still at the lower knowledge. Anything, even you can recite all the Vedas, you can recite the Upanishads, you have memorized Sanskrit, you can speak Latin, you can memorize Bible verses and chant them, or from Guru Granth Sahib you can chant. All that is wonderful. But until you know what they indicate, you are still in that, at the level of thought. And we have to go beyond thought to what is supporting the thought. What is that because of which I'm able to see, think, talk, experience, feel? So that is the difference between the lower knowledge and the higher knowledge, knowledge and wisdom. Of course, in this chapter, Swamiji has hinted very briefly about up to here is what Swamiji spoke, but I thought, you know, we should get something additional, so I tried to add that so that, you know, so that we can think beyond but he has explained it very well in the chapter, but in brief. So, any questions, any comments?
I mean, we all have our own experiences as we learn things or we get the knowledge, but it's still colored by our experience.
Yeah.
It couldn't be wisdom.
Right. Because what you are talking is our experience through our BMI.
Right.
But this is not an experience through the BMI. This is knowing my own essence. At that moment, when a master realizes, then he's no longer using his eyes to see, his mind to feel, or his intellect to think. All three of them become quiet. There is at that time no body experience. There are no emotions felt, and the intellect also gets stilled. So in the stillness of your meditation, what you experience is different from what experience you are talking. As a child, say you experienced a falling, or as a child you had some friend. So that is your experience. Or when you went to school and college, studied. So those are all still come under lower, under knowledge. Wisdom is not, what you are talking is experience colored by my vasanas,
right,
by my desires. So that's not the experience the masters are talking about. That's not, that whatever you are speaking is still ordinary knowledge.
Right.
Higher knowledge is when there is no mind, there is no experiencer, experienced, there is none. In that stillness of meditation, when the mind becomes completely still and stays in that, that's why they say that, I'll talk maybe what is meditation. So they say meditation is unbroken knowledge of that object, which is not an object, but which is my inner being, which is the Supreme Self. You initially start out by saying, in meditation, I'm not going to think about the world. That's good. I'm not going to think about my family. I'm not going to think about work. And then you stay in a quiet place so that there is no sound. And there is, you close your eyes so you don't experience anything. You don't see anything, and then you chant the mantra, and then your mind becomes still and quiet. And when that mind becomes still, that's not meditation. Then that mind has to be directed inward, where My Supreme Self, the Om, the consciousness, resides. And in that stillness of the meditation, when one becomes one, that's why we call this knowledge Advaita, means there are no two. There is no two. Actually, that alone exists. This body, this mind, this intellect, this name, Anil or Diana or Tony, are just temporary appearances on this earth, which we will be here for another 10, 20, 30 years and then we'll be gone. But that eternal existence, which is my true nature, will always be there. That is imperishable. And that can only be experienced when you transcend the mind. You go beyond the mind. Through the mind and intellect, you cannot know the truth. But when the mind and intellect become still, then you experience the true I. Not the ego, not the limited I, not the little I, but the true essence of who I am. So, even though they call it an experience, it is not an experience. Because can you experience yourself? No, I cannot experience myself. I don't say I experience Anil. I am Anil. You don't say I experience Diana's presence. No, you can never experience Diana's absence. Can you say I am not present? No, nobody can say that. I cannot say I am absent. So I am always present. This I is not Anil, because Anil will perish. In a few years, Anil will be gone. But I, that consciousness, that will always remain. And once you understand that, then you become that. And that's why these great saints could say that the Father in heaven and I are one, because they experienced that I am the Father in heaven. Jesus didn't have to say that Father in heaven is somewhere else. If you have seen me, you have seen the Father. He could confidently say that because he knew that I am the Father in heaven. And so the final, our initial understanding is Om is in me. The Atman, the Self is in me. No, the Self is not in me, Atman is not in me, Om is not in me. I am Om, I am Atman, I am the Self, I am the Father in heaven, I am that. And so that is the final experience. Because Father in heaven is not sitting somewhere in heaven, but is in my heart as life, as consciousness. So we always think God is somewhere else, but God is me. And people say, oh, how can you be God? We are not saying me, this body is God, but the Self, the consciousness that is illumining my presence is God. And in meditation, when there is an undivided, constant knowledge in the direction of the Self, then the culmination of that knowledge is called Samadhi. In Samadhi, there is no knower, no known, and no knowing. Just as there are three, like I am eating an apple. So I eating an apple are three. I am driving a car. So same way, I am meditating on the Self. That is still three. I am meditating on Om, the Self. But ultimately, I and meditating disappear and the Self alone remains. So there is no triad. There is no meditator who is meditating on the meditated. They all become one. So that is the final. Even to use the word experience is wrong, but we have to say something. But it's the final understanding. That's a better word. The final understanding is I am that. And then this person who has known that becomes that and then lives like that. Then no longer this person goes back to the state of ignorance. You and I are still in ignorance because we have not experienced our true nature. We are all trying. But a prophet or a wise person or a saint who has experienced then no longer can be deluded, and not only that, but no longer the world can torture such an individual. No matter how much sorrow they give, it's not to me. That's why these great masters, there was a story of a master in India who needed to have a tumor removed from his stomach. And he said, I don't need any anesthesia. He just checked out. He just went into samadhi. He said, go ahead and operate. And they actually cut open his stomach, removed his tumor, sewed him up, cauterized the blood, bleeding, everything they did. He didn't feel a thing because he was not there anymore. He had already checked out. And this is a true story. So because they are no longer identified with the body. So they say, whatever you do to the body, I am not the body. And they are able to withdraw from this body identity. And that is called true wisdom. That is called the higher knowledge. And that is what the scriptures take us to, that knowledge. So I hope I answered your question. It was a long answer, but...
No, it was, thank you. I just wonder, like, what happens when you're out of the body, if that essence knows the truth? You have to actually experience it.
See, that out of the body also is, that's also at the level of the mind. You know, people who travel out of the body, they are still not at that essence state. That's also a mental experience where I can get out of my body and travel to higher worlds and all. But that is also, advanced thinkers can do that, but that is still an experience. Ultimately, even out of body experience is also a lower knowledge.
But like, if you have no body left, you've left the body.
Yeah, but still, your mind and intellect is still working, right? You are knowing that I am trapped. That is still at the mind and intellect level. Even when there is no thought, not even a thought that I am out of body, that's why in meditation, when your mind becomes still, which it happens on occasion, and then you experience that inner peace and silence. But it's not I am experiencing peace, I am peace. Not I am experiencing silence, I am silence. Not I am experiencing the divinity, I am the divinity. So there is a difference. Like I said, you cannot say I am experiencing Diana, I am Diana.
Right.
So that is, so even to use the word experience confuses people, because they think that, you know, when I'm sitting in meditation, suddenly there will be a big light and God will appear, and then he will say, oh son, oh daughter, I'm child, I'm so pleased with you, ask what you want. And then I'll say, God, I don't need anything, I have seen you. There is none of that. It is just the understanding. It's a change of thinking. It's not that suddenly light will shine or you will hear. You know, a lot of faiths talk about sound. Oh, you will hear some sound. You will see a blue light. Those are all steps that are telling you that you are going in the right direction. But they get so caught up that I have to see the blue light. I have to hear bells. You don't have to hear anything. All you have to know is I am that. That's all. Did you have a question? Yeah.
Sure. How do you know when you're there? And also, is samadhi the only way, or is there another way, such as elimination of vasanas?
Vasanas helps. Elimination of vasanas, because vasanas is an obstacle between me, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, and Om. But just elimination of vasanas alone is not enough. That I can do through service. If I'm serving the world, I remove selfishness, greed, jealousy, hatred. But it's still not the final. In the final is when the mind has to be stilled and the direction of the thoughts has to be inward. And in that silence, you experience. I said even the word experience is wrong. You know I am that. So it is knowing and it is being. It is not experiencing. Because people have this idea that I can experience God. You cannot. Well, I mean, if they say that if you worship a particular form, And you want God to appear in that form. If your worship is strong enough, it can happen. And like, if you want to see Shiva, so they say that chant Om Namah Shivaya 5 crore, that's 50 million times. 50 million times if you chant the name of the Lord with full attention and devotion, you can see God. God will appear in a particular form. But why do you want to do that? All you have to do is know I am that. But yeah, people have done that. And actually they say 50 million times if you chant. First of all, you have to keep track. Then you have to chant with attention. Your memory cannot, while chanting, you cannot be thinking of your daughter or your work. But yes. Does that answer your question? Elimination of vasanas is very essential. Without elimination of vasanas, you won't progress spiritually. We even talked yesterday in the Gita class that you have to purify. It's like I want to fly to Europe. I cannot take a plane from Bakersfield to fly to Europe. I have to take a bus to Los Angeles or take a plane or a train either to Los Angeles or San Francisco. From there, I can take a plane to fly to London. From Bakersfield, I cannot directly. So, removal of vasanas is like the train that takes you from Bakersfield to Los Angeles. But then ultimately, you have to get in the plane and fly from Los Angeles to London. And so that is the second, that is wisdom. Knowledge is the train I take from here to San Francisco or the bus I take from here to Los Angeles. And that is removal of vasanas and the knowledge. But then to become one with that knowledge is that flight that I take from LA to London. So that is wisdom. That is the difference between ordinary knowledge and higher knowledge.